After all the moves they make, is there anything that you wanted to accomplish at the deadline that you did not?
I don't think so. I think there are always players you pursue that you would have liked to acquire. There are always conversations you have that that you try to steer in a particular direction. But we're happy with the work that went into this. We're happy with our process, and pleased that we were able to add some talent to the team.
Dave, you seem to come into the season with a plan and what you wanted to do. You know, you've talked about short term and long term, and I think when the team went on a run from June 1st, you guys have had the best record in baseball. Did that change, you know, the view, and was there a temptation to think differently about the team when you saw it play as well as it did, or did you still try to keep, you know, that short and long term thing and not be kind of pulled into the temptation of maybe doing more than or giving away more?
I think the plan coming into the season was to compete and make the playoffs. Like that was the plan, and that remains the plan. And so I think where we are right now doesn't really matter how we got here. We got to a place where we are a playoff caliber team. We believe we're a playoff caliber team, and we did what we thought was the right thing to do in adding to certain components of the team.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Wednesday, July the 31st, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to a midweek edition of the Talking Mets podcast. The trade deadline is over. We are officially in you gotta go get it done phase. August is just about here. A business person special, and the Mets will be done with July, and they look to sweep the Minnesota Twins today at Citi Field. And a bit to talk about. I just wanted to come to you with a State of the Union. Had a chance to marinate on the activities of yesterday. A lot of anticipation, and it's like that every year with the trade deadline. And it's funny because you're going to listen to a lot of shows, and you're going to have, as I predicted a couple of days ago, one of two reactions. You're going to have the outrage reaction. How can the Mets not go all in? And there'll be debates about what the other teams gave up and why the Mets are hugging prospects and Stearns is a small market GM. You're going to have that reaction. You're going to have other extreme reactions about, you know, Stearns and how he approached the deadline. And maybe you'll have those that will recap and tell you how great everything is and how great Stearns was at yesterday's activities. But reality is that we create, and we talk about this all the time on the show, and it happens in the winter during the winter meetings specifically, and it happens throughout the winter when it comes to building a team. And now it happens all the time at the trade deadline. But the winter meetings and the trade deadline are these two arbitrary periods where the media tries to tell you, well, there's a winner, there's a loser, and your activities or your behaviors during those snapshots in time during the season, important snapshots but not the end-all be-all, are labeling you. And what's funny is that the Mets were labeled since Stearns took over as a team rebuilding, as a team in pause mode, as a team not ready to contend. And since day one, Stearns has never said that. Stearns has never said that on record. All Stearns has said is that, you know, in his own way, he's learning an organization, and he's trying to thread a needle where he's attempting to create, especially in this very, very expensive baseball salary environment, a way where each year the Mets, whether they're competing for a division, one of the top three or four teams in the league, or just like they are this year, a competitive team in the MOC where they have the best chance of making the postseason, competing and winning potentially in a tournament, and being able to do it again next year. And that's a difficult thing. Sustainable winning, what you've seen the Dodgers do, what you've seen the Yankees do, what you've seen at times, and the Braves have had their ups and downs as well, but what you've seen the Braves do, requires what the Mets have is money, but it also requires something that the Mets haven't really had, which is a sustainable plan and the same people making decisions and putting in a philosophy. And that's what they're trying to build. And the Mets never said they weren't out to win. And this idea of winning at all costs and what that looks like, I don't even know what that really means. I mean, does that mean you trade every prospect for every possible roster replacement? Because I don't understand what that means. And everybody's going to get caught up in labels. Well, the Mets didn't go for it. The Mets did go for it. I agree exactly what Stern said coming in. The Mets went out, and from day one, they've been trying to balance this thing. And they got the best possible players for the least amount of prospect capital. And I think that with the prices being what they were, I mean, let's face it, San Diego got themselves a couple of really good relievers in Adams and Scott. I'm not so sure about Scott. Scott's having a career year. I still think he walks a lot of batters, but they got some really good bullpen arms. They gave up six of, I think, the top 15 prospects for that, for relievers. And that's crazy when you think about it. The Orioles, a team that's been in purgatory for a while and maybe in a bit of a different situation than the Mets, and has done a really good job in building up their farm system to the point where, let's face it, they probably can never employ all the prospects they've had at their disposal. Always regarded over the last couple of years as a great farm system. They gave up, and I think Heath Rad said it best on the broadcast last night, listening to him during the game. They gave up for Trevor Rogers, a guy who has some upside and has been really good, but hasn't been good in a long time. And a lefty arm that the Mets were looking at that maybe they thought they could plug into the rotation and obviously had control and some upside going forward. They gave up the equivalent of Brett Beatty and Luis Acuña Jr. for that pitcher. And I'm like, I don't know if I would do that. I know I wouldn't do that. And, you know, maybe I'm looking at this a little bit differently, but I was amazed at the cost and how crazy things got. And it's frustrating sometimes because I'm thinking back to when the Mets had a really good closer on the market and they weren't contending. It wasn't that long ago. It was about 5 or 6 years ago when Jiri's Familia was on the market. The Mets couldn't go, well, he's a free agent. You can't expect any prospect capital. And it's really crazy how things swing one way or the other. And the media has something to do with it, but obviously there are industry trends that start. And somehow now, regardless of a player has got a bad medical history like Flaherty and is a free agent, you're getting top five prospects. I mean, look at what, and the Yankees walked away from it. Look at what Detroit fetched for a free agent, a guy with a history of significant arm problems, shoulder problems, and Flaherty. They got a top five catching prospect and a decent, you know, top 30-ish power hitting middle infielder in Trey Sweeney, who actually the Yankees traded earlier in the year to the Dodgers for Flaherty. Now that is not nearly, I think, as good as maybe what the Orioles gave up for Rogers and what the Padres gave up for a couple of relievers, but it's a good return. And the Mets, honestly, I don't know how comfortable I'd feel giving up a top five prospect for Flaherty. It would help the Mets, obviously, in the rotation, especially with Senga out. But let's also remember, as you thread, let's use the fashionable term, thread the needle. The Mets, and maybe because they're not competing for a division or one of the best records in the league, maybe that changes a little bit of how much the investment is, but I'm not so sure. The Mets right now are only guaranteed by making the postseason for at least two games, maybe three. That's what a wild card team gets. Three games. You're either going to get it with another wild card team or you're going to get it with the division winner that has the least amount of you know, the worst division winner, let's say. And in the past, if you really go back in baseball history, you had the wild card play-in. So, okay, that team. But even a wild card team was guaranteed a series, was guaranteed a five-game series. Mets go in 2000 as a wild card. They have a series against the Giants. Now wild card teams, it's way different. Now the bar has been lowered. So I think the way that teams approach the deadline has to change. And I think that's what you're seeing. The Mets are saying, hey, if I'm only guaranteed these games, and I feel that I could find a way to put a roster together and create roles, you know, especially as you throw starters in the bullpen and whatnot, that I could still compete and win in those series. And I think that's where things are changing. I also think you have to look at, as you assess the deadline and you assess how the Mets are going about their business, what the baseball financial landscape is like. If you want to stay within some reasonable, and this tax is a big deal. And I know everybody's saying, oh, Steve Cohen has all this money. Forget the money, and let's just put aside, even though it's part of it, Cohen's spending on a tax and whether he can or cannot afford it. We know spending unnecessary money is bad business. You don't become wealthy like Cohen by doing that. Let's put that aside. At some point, you have to have a cap and a budget. You can't have a $500, $600 million payroll. And there are going to be players that you want. And with everybody who's decent, decent pitchers are making $15 a year. Elite pitchers make $35 to $40 million a year. Good hitters are going to make $30 million a year. Pretty good hitters, $20 to $25 million a year. When you start to look at that and you start to see those numbers, I don't care who you are. I don't care how wealthy you are. And there was a graphic recently that about 35 to 38% of revenue from a baseball team, unlike the NFL, which is heavy media revenue, comes from the actual ticket sales, people going to the ballpark, which requires winning. But it's so variable. It's variable from day to day, even with a good team, weather and other things that are going on. And you have to, at some point, if you run a baseball team, you're going to have to pull from the revenue that baseball team generates from itself. Yeah, I know Cohen could say, oh, I could go into my kitty here, and there are benefits for that, but that's just not realistic. And even Cohen has said, I'm not going into my pocket for losses of $200, $250 million every year for in perpetuity so the Mets could go out and get themselves another $8 million reliever. That doesn't make sense. And if you take the mindset, which you're going to hear today from talking heads, that, well, the Mets didn't go for it and they're hugging prospects. Well, at some point, Francisco Alvarez, Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil, Vientos, Nimmo, all homegrown from the Mets. They were prospects that could have been traded at a deadline at some point, especially when they were in their lower levels of the minor leagues. I'll throw in McGill and Peterson. You may not think a lot, but they're controllable cost-wise, and the Mets don't have to go and compete on the free agent market for them. You guys all laugh about Peterson. If Peterson continues the trend that he's in, and he's a guy that's probably, if he's a free agent, with an ERA plus of 111, if he continues that, he's a guy that could get $15 million a year. $13 to $14, $15 million a year. Jose Buto, where would the Mets be without him? That's a guy that they easily at some point could have traded at a deadline the last few years, maybe when Billy Epler was looking to upgrade the roster for another reliever to get them to those three games. So you have to be careful. You have to be careful, and you have to look at the game differently. So that's really the theme of everything. When you assess whether you thought the Mets did a good or bad job, you have to look at the entire landscape of what's in front of Stearns. And the Mets actually, and I know they're still paying off the Verlander and Scherzer situation. It looks like they're going to be out from under the Verlander situation because he got hurt. And they're going to be out from under the dead money with Scherzer and McCann and stuff like that. I think McCann at 21, 22, 20. Yeah, McCann, I think, is off the books too. So things are opening up, and they're going to have the opportunity to spend. But you've got an elite offensive talent, the modern-day Ted Williams that potentially is going to be on the market, that's probably going to ask for $55 to $60 million a year in Soto. If you want to be part of that, and if those are the kind of players the Mets want to be in on, and they were in on Yamamoto, another, 35 to $40 million a year pitcher. If you're going to be in on those guys, at some point, you need to surround them with cost-controlled talent that can produce at a high level. Where would the Mets be with their offense if they didn't have cost-controlled, high-producing talent in the lineup like Vientos and Alvarez? Where would they be without Buto? And truthfully, as much as we want to trash McGill and Peterson, and I'm right there, their depth and what they've provided out of the rotation, a rotation that has a lot of quantity but may not have a number one or even a number two by the traditional sense, although I think Severino and Sean Manaea might have something to say about that. And think about, as you head into the offseason, Mets acquire a guy like Blackburn, which I was about. He was probably the least exciting out of all the names I heard on the market. That's the one the Mets go for. And look at what he cost Cade Morris, who we had on the Talking Mets top prospects list on the pitching side. He was our top 10 pitcher and somebody that potentially could have slid in and maybe been better as time goes on. Look at what he cost. And knowing that the Mets have potentially Manaea is a free agent, Severino's a free agent, Quintana, they've got three guys that are going out into the free agent market. And with the way that pitching is going, there are going to be teams that potentially, even at the advanced age of Quintana, who's going to be in his late 30s, may offer a contract the Mets look at and say, I could do better than that, or you know, the Mets go in a different direction. And they're going to need some numbers. And that's where Blackburn, I think, provides that a little bit. And that's important at this point. So maybe the Mets didn't go out and get the sexy names, but if you look at their roster today versus a couple of weeks ago, and you also have to look at the deadline. The deadline started for the Mets. It's not just July 30th. The deadline started a couple of weeks ago, right before the All-Star break, or maybe right after, when they got Phil Maton, and then they got Ryan Stanek a couple of weeks later. So they've been working on building the team. Jesse Winker on Saturday night, and that was a great move. I mean, look, Winker's such an annoying guy as an opposing player, but when you watch him, even for a couple of games, he's got energy, he's got a good bat, he works counts. And look, the bullpen is still something that makes me nervous. Stanek makes me very nervous. Maton makes me nervous. Diaz makes me nervous. Until they get Nunez back, I'm not sure I'm going to be feeling really good about the bullpen, no matter who they would have brought in, unless it was another closer, like a guy like Estevez that we talked about, or a second closer. But that is what it is. The Mets are going to have to work through that. They're going to have to provide the right matchups. You know, hopefully, Hefner and all the resources they have from the pitching side, they are able to go out and see if they can get the best version of Stanek. You know, they've got this kid's Zuber. Who knows what he's all about? It's really interesting how the Mets... And with Brazenban from Miami, really good stuff. You know, multiple pitches in the repertoire, keeps the ball on the ground. If you go to Baseball Savant, he lights up with all elite performances across most categories. Now he's going from no man's land to the pennant race, and he's an older pitcher, even though he's under control. He's in his mid-30s because he's a late bloomer. But he has some interesting stuff. So the Mets, what's funny is a lot of times you go for names and you give up top prospects for names. But if you look at the peripherals of a Brazenban, and we don't, you know, heard a little bit about they like Zuber with some of his pitch shaping. And you look at where Blackburn fits into the rotation. You weren't ever going to get, unless you went and got a Flaherty, or you were able to get Crochet or Scooble, which I don't think those guys, they weren't traded. I don't know how realistic any of those guys were. And the haul for those guys, I'd have to question if that's what the haul is. I'd rather look in the offseason and see what that similar haul could get me maybe for another elite player on either side of the ball. And remember, the Mets are playing for three games extra. That's all. They're not winning the division. I know the Phillies have come back down to earth a little bit. I know the Mets, it's look, teams have come back from much greater deficits in August. So you want to dare to dream that the division is still a possibility? Fine. But the Mets are playing for three extra games, and I think they reinforced the roster and invested in the club. And is it an investment that nobody really seemed to say anything negative? Did it signal the wrong thing to the clubhouse? Well, I don't know, and nobody's going to say that. But it's not like they didn't invest at all. It's not like they pulled away. If they did what the media wanted the Mets to do, which is thread the needle, let's trade a Severino and get prospects back, because I saw some rumblings about that, and still compete and win, well, then that's not taking the human factor into the equation. And it was always like, I love this thread the needle. Like, the media created all these narratives about Stearns and the Mets and what they're going to do. None of them were true. I mean, there are options. Every team should look at that. A lot of teams sold and bought. Pirates were one of them. Texas did that in right situations. But I think they almost made it seem like the Mets. And look, it would have been interesting. From a standpoint of organizational building, seeing what you could have fetched for Severino on in a market where Trevor Rogers got you two top five prospects, arguably, maybe you want to say they're top 10, even though they have flaws, it would have been interesting. I mean, I think the Mets could have gotten a top five prospect for Severino. But it is funny when the Mets have, or in their position where they have the player and they're trying to trade him, all of a sudden, well, this player doesn't qualify. It's funny how the tune changes sometimes. And we'll see. When the Mets, the next time they're in a position, depending on, of course, by that time, the market will change. And people will say, well, it's not good to overpay the deadline because San Diego will flame out. They'll have all these prospects littered across the league. And somebody or one or two of them will be coming to something really good. And remember, you know, you trade prospects for a pretty good win-now fix. You get Tatis Jr. for James Shields. Everybody talks about Kelnick and still cries about Kelnick. Not so much anymore. Nobody ever talks about that. Go look that one up. Good deal for the Padres to a Chicago team trying to compete and win. With a pitcher that was pretty good. Pretty good. A really solid veteran pitcher. That was probably in his heyday when he was at his best at number three. So you really have to look at yesterday as, how do the Mets do to get themselves in the tournament? And I know what you're saying. They really didn't close the gap in a big league way with Philadelphia or the Dodgers. I'm not sure there was a deal, per se, that was going to be able to accomplish that on July 30th. I also don't know if the Mets can sustainably compete with those teams over the next 5 years by doing such a deal, which, you know, you could clean out the farm system. I'm sure you could have gotten Crochet. I'm sure you could have gotten Skubal. You could have maybe went bananas, and I don't think you could have gotten both, but I'm sure there's enough. The Mets have the prospect capital to get one of those guys. I'm not sure you could get both. That would be crazy. And then you say, wow, you have this elite top of the rotation combo. Injury risk. And then what about your depth? I mean, look at how important depth has been. If the Mets didn't have a solid farm, they're not in this position. Because the reason they're in this position is because Vientos came up and is hitting like a top third baseman in the league. Nunez came up, there's another name, and has been able to be the setup man to Diaz that they're technically what they were looking for at the deadline. Without those guys, I mean, this is a far different situation. And you have to say this, I mean, whether you like what Stearns did or not, whether you like Stearns or not, you like the... And for years, you clamored for this kind of GM, this kind of president baseball operation. You got it. Now people are like crying because they want this GM, but they want the behaviors of GMs of past, of Omar Minaya, truly a chips to the center of the table guy. And there is something to be said with that. And I don't think Stearns, I think Billy Epler was far more disappointing at that deadline than Stearns. I think Stearns got creative. Stearns was faced with an expensive deadline, more so than Billy Epler. And Billy Epler tried to get component-driven pieces. But, I mean, he gave up Colin Holderman, which turned out to be... I mean, that's an example you have to be careful. You know, Vogelbach gave them a couple of good months. They needed a bat. And they gave up a reliever that, quite honestly, they could use today. I remember that deal when it first happened. Ooh, that's a little bit much for Daniel Vogelbach. So I'm okay with the direction of the franchise. You should be too. It's okay to be disappointed they didn't land the biggest names out there. But when you really look at what was given up, I mean, could you honestly feel good today? And what I wouldn't come on here and feel good if the Mets gave up six of their top 15 prospects for two relievers, because that would make them a hell of a lot better shot of solidifying the top wild card spot. I'm not sure it would change their division position. And if you don't get one of the top two spots in the league, you're only guaranteed three games. That's it. And the variability in that is tough. It's tough to go out and say, let me give up Brandon Sproat for Garrett Crochet. Because I'm guaranteeing you, and Stearns admitted that during his press conference, that's what it would have cost. Like Sproat, any of these top guys. And he's looking at also this season, he's starting to learn what he's got here. And he's also looking to see what he can do to be competitive over the next couple of years. Now, the jury's still out. I don't think Stearns failed his first test. I think Stearns showed you who he really is. And if this thread the needle, we'll use again, there's that term, that thread the needle mindset of long term and short term is who he is. Now, at some point, is the Blackburns of the world and the Brazemans of the world going to be good enough in future deadlines? I guess it'll depend on the market. For this year, for the market and the prices, it was. You want to argue they could have competed with the package that the Dodgers got Flaherty? You'd have to give up. And I don't know if they'd want. You're like, you don't know what Detroit wants to. You know, Detroit might say, hey, I want this type of prospect. And the Mets might not have that in their top five. That was an elite catching prospect they got. I mean, on paper, yeah, the Mets have prospects that are equal to that. You also don't know what the needs are for the Detroit organization. See, that's the part that gets harder to assess. You could go and rumor mill and talk to people in organizations, but in the moment, it's very hard because these guys know behind closed doors, we don't. So you can't assess this one-to-one. But Mets got themselves another arm. It's an arm. Real quick, I don't think Blackburn is anything sexy. He's a guy that I think gets good offenses, especially on the road, to get hit hard. I think he'll give you an okay outing against most teams in the league. He goes up against Chicago, he'll probably give you a good outing. He goes on the road to Atlanta, maybe not. We'll see how the Mets go with five or six starters. It allows them to keep Buto in the bullpen. Be interesting how they use Buto. He's very Seth Lugo-ish, where once you get him up and get him in the game, especially earlier in Lugo's career, not so much later in his career. When he was earlier in his career, it was like, hey, you're not going to get 4 out of 5 days. You're not going to get back-to-backs. Once you get him up, you got to get him in the game or you're going to lose him. So there's a certain level of that, and that'll be interesting how they deploy that. Hopefully they get Nunez back. Maton seems to be okay. Static makes me really nervous. I'm really interested to see what Zuber, if he's going to be on the roster. The Mets haven't really told you what they're going to do because Zuber has optionability. They talked about that. And then the real guy I'm excited to see how he could have an impact, and he's got control, is Brazoban. I mean, keeps the ball on the ground, good strikeout rate, seems to have improved on his walk rate. Guys like that, the only thing that concerns me is they go from dim lights, no fans, no pennant race, to bright lights and the city. And that could be a problem, but we'll see. And I love the Winker move, and I think it's important more so than people think because I don't think Starling Marte can play every day anymore. And don't be surprised if Marte becomes somewhat of a backup when he comes back. And I don't know if he's coming back as soon as people think. I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see him till September. I think they're not revealing how serious that injury is. At his age, at his point in his career, I think that you're going to see more of that. And look, yeah, you want to go out and get Soto, but Winker is a guy, if he likes it here and you like him, he's not that far removed from 2021 where he was an elite offensive player. I mean, he was an annoying thorn in the side. And you could possibly get him on a short-term deal because he still has something to prove. And you could get an all-star performance. And I know defensively he's not great, but a lefty bat that gets on base, has pop, and enjoys, or at least at this point, enjoys the energy and has the personality for New York, there's some value to that. Especially with Marte on the decline. Now, I know you want to go out, you want to get big names, you want to get Soto, but that's one of the things that Sandy Alderson warned us about when he came back on board when Cohen became the owner. Sometimes having too many resources and the ability to get anybody you want makes life that much harder, and it certainly makes media analysis and criticism and the way they assess at a higher bar and an unrealistic bar. So when you listen to the other pundits today and they yell, yeah, the Mets should have went for it, they blew it, Stearns is on the clock, or everybody praising everything that Stearns does because they're going to look at everything through blue and orange glasses, that both of those extremes don't work. I think the Mets made some interesting moves. I think the jury is out about how they're going to fit and how good they're going to be. I understand the process. You have to understand the process, and you have to understand what the cost of good players, especially free agents and your own that you want to keep, starting to get into that $25 to $30 million minimum. And that luxury tax threshold, as of now, not going up in the same manner, de facto cap, even Cohen is going to have to stay under that number at some point to reset. A 90% tax is insane. So you're going to have cost-controlled pieces from your system, even if they're not stars, middle relievers, backup infielders, backup catchers. Can't pay everyone because everybody gets paid. Veterans get paid money. And if you tear away at each one of them just to solve an itch today, an itch that's minimally putting you in a minimal better spot, you're not going to be able to compete. You're going to have disastrous results. And you can see it on the field. There are players that at some point, I guarantee you, 2016, 27, 2018, 2019, the deadline, if you said give a Vientos. Look, Brandon Nimmo was out the door for Jay Bruce. If not for a failed physical, he would not be here. The Mets got lucky on that one. And they wound up getting Jay Bruce for a lesser package. Think about how, Jay Bruce had a good run with the Mets, but think about how disastrous that would have been. Sometimes the trades that you don't make are the ones that you wind up doing the best on. So anyway, that's my trade deadline assessment. Hope you enjoyed this midweek edition of the show. Mets playing a business person special. They'll be going on the road. Big road trip. We'll be here to cover it. And continue to go to the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG for midweek content, both paid and free. Obviously, we'll be back late game on Sunday with the trip to the West Coast. And we'll be back with another Talking Pets podcast later this week. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Of course, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And as I said, don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Wednesday. Enjoy the game today. Enjoy your day off tomorrow. A little bit, no baseball, that you need it. And then the big road trip starts. Till then, take care, everybody.